Our scripture reading for this hour's lesson is found in the first chapter of the book of John. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. John, his gospel account, chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. John says, "In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." But once again, let me echo my sentiments. A pleasant good morning to you. We are so very appreciative of you and your desire to be here this morning. To those who are visiting, once you know that we're so delighted that you are here, and we sure would love to see you any chance that you may have to join us here at the Arlington Church of Christ. I want to extend that invitation to those who are listening to us on the radio this morning. So appreciative of that. Hope you can join us any chance. 2500 Faulkner Springs Road is the address to the building. And we've got a Friday night singing coming up November the 3rd, and we sure would love to see you here for that. We'll eat at 6 and sing at 7. And so please take this as my personal invitation to you. In a Sunday school class on the 5 and 6 year olds, a teacher was doing a very good job of trying to impress upon these young minds the 10 commandments. And she said, "You know, boys and girls, there's a commandment that tells us how we're to treat our parents. Thou shalt honor thy father and thy mother." And then she said, "Is there any commandment that tells us how we should treat our brothers and sisters?" And one little boy in the back immediately said, "Thou shalt not kill." I mean, I guess that's not where she was going, but it worked nonetheless. We're looking at the book of John. We've been doing in it all month of October, 5 Sundays, 5 lessons, simply titled "The Word." That's how John depicts Jesus Christ. And so that's where we've been. We will continue to do so. We have looked previously at how the Word was there in the beginning. We looked at how God is the Word and really looked at all three members of the Godhead, the Father, Son, and the Spirit, identifying different passages where all three are identified at once, but they're all doing different jobs. Last week, we looked at how Jesus is the Messiah and the Son of God. This morning, I want us to look at the phrase, "I am." Jesus is the great I am. And as we've talked about defining words, it can be difficult. I want you to imagine trying to describe something to someone who does not know English. I've got a poem here I want to share with you. It says it was written by John Godfrey Sachs. He lived 1816 to 1887. I got it out of the back of an old tract by Kenneth Ford, and it's simply titled "The Blind Men and the Elephant." He calls it a Hindu fable. It was 6 men of Indostan trying to learning much inclined, who went to see the elephant, though all of them were blind, that each by observation might satisfy his mind. The first approached the elephant and happened to fall against his broad and sturdy side, and at once began to bawl, "God bless me, but the elephant is very like a wall." The second, feeling of the tusk, cried, "Ho, what have we here, so round and smooth and sharp? To me 'tis mighty clear, this wonder of an elephant is very like a spear." The third approached the animal and happened to take the squirming trunk within his hands, thus boldly up and spake, "I see," quoth he, "the elephant is very like a snake." The fourth reached out an eager hand and felt about the knee, "What most this wondrous beast is he is mighty plain," quoth he, "'tis very clear the elephant, it's very like a tree." The fifth, who chanced to touch the ear, said, "E'en the blindest man can tell what this resembles most. Deny the fact, who can? This marvel of an elephant is very like a fan." The sixth no sooner had begun, the beast about to grope, than seizing on the swinging tail that fell within his scope, "I see," quoth he, "the elephant is very like a rope." And two of these men of Indostan disputed long and loud, each of his own opinion, exceeding stiff and strong, though each was partly in the right, were all in the wrong. So what's the moral? So oft in theologic wars, the disputants, I ween, they rail on in utter ignorance of what each other mean, and prate about an elephant none of them has seen. Too many times people try to describe something, and they don't even know what they're talking about. I mean, can you imagine if you have never seen an elephant and you just grab different parts of it? Well, this morning we're not going to describe an elephant. I hope you maybe have figured that out with that little poem. I want us to describe Jesus. But more, I'm not going to describe him. I'm going to see how Jesus describes himself. Why take my word for it when you can just see what he tells us? And what's very interesting in the book of Exodus, when Moses appears to God, or God appears to Moses in the burning bush, Moses offers some excuses. There's about four of them in Exodus 3 and also chapter 4. And one of them, when God tells Moses, I want you to free my people. And Moses says, God, who shall I tell them sent me? And God says, you tell them I am sent you. I, capital A, capital M, capital. Not I was, not I will be, but ever present, I am. And Moses said, what? He said, I am that I am. And that was the way that God chose to reveal himself to Moses. What I find interesting is in John's gospel, Jesus calls himself I am seven times. And although each one of these is worthy of its own study, and maybe, Lord willing, we'll do that one day, maybe today's lesson can serve as a crash course, if you will, in the I am statements of the book of John. They're not long, they're not laborious, but let's see how Jesus Christ, the Word, describes himself. So number one, Jesus says, I am the bread of life. Go with me to John chapter 6 and verse 48. That's what that number is at the top of the line in our presentation. I left off the book John, since that's where all our thoughts are coming from, or at least the predominant of them are. John chapter 6 and verse 48. Jesus says, I am that bread of life. So he says, I am. But notice, that bread of life. He's already said this. Go back to chapter 6 verse 35. Here is the feeding of the 5,000. That happens at the start of the chapter, verses 1 through 14. And then those followers of Christ, they ask him questions. And so notice he says in verse 35, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger. And he that believeth on me shall never thirst. So Jesus, number one, he identifies himself as the bread of life. What I find interesting, this is in context of the only miracle that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John record. Only one, it's a feeding of the 5,000. The others are in three. Some miracles are in three, some are in two, some are in one. But only one's in all four. That's the feeding of the 5,000. And notice here, it's significant to Christ. Those who come and eat of the bread of life, he goes on in verse 48 to say, I am that bread of life. There is to be no doubt. Now, the world you and I live in is just a little bit different than it was in biblical times. Today, you and I go to the grocery store maybe once a week. Hopefully you don't go every day, but you might. You might could go one or every other week. I know some people, and I'm amazed they can do it. They go grocery shopping once a month for a whole month. Kudos if that's you. I'm glad you can plan that far in the future. In biblical times, daily bread was essential to their life. Remember the model prayer in Matthew 6, 9 through 13? It teaches how to pray. Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. See, we don't pray that kingdom come part. It already came, Acts 2. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Give us our daily bread. In biblical times, you got bread every day. Except on the Sabbath. You made twice the amount of bread on the day before the Sabbath, so you couldn't bake on the Sabbath day. So give us our daily bread. In the biblical world, you went to the store every morning and you either bought bread or you baked bread. You didn't keep a loaf that has a 2-week shelf life in your pantry, in your bread box. You got it every day. Now, some cultures are still like this with the daily grocery. In South Korea, for instance, they have tried to put a Walmart in South Korea and it failed. Because the Korean mindset is not buy in bulk. It's let's buy what we need for today and maybe tomorrow. So a lot of places in the world still do this. But you realize, and this is not a health kick. I'm not telling you to or not to eat bread. I like bread. But bread is essential to life. Bread is truly essential to life. So Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread. I want you to think about this. Jesus wants to be your daily thing. Right? Daily bread. He is the bread of life. Jesus wants you to be the thing that you need and you crave the most every day. Now, when I have a sandwich, my favorite time to have a sandwich is the first sandwich out of the loaf of bread. Because to me, that is when I'm a bunny bread family. That's what we always had. If you're Wonder Bread, this will work for my illustration still. When I bite into that bunny bread and that first bite sticks to the roof of my mouth, that is fresh bread. And I crave that feeling. I'm weird. I thought you knew that by now. I crave that. When we go to a restaurant and they serve rolls, I crave that. Jesus wants to be the thing that you crave every day. He wants to be that part of your day that you look forward to. He says, blessed is he, Matthew 5:4, which does hunger and thirst after righteousness, for he shall be filled. And that's not a feel to the next meal. That is a satisfying feel, nothing left. As we move on to our second point, I saw on a church sign one time, it said, without the bread of life, you're toast. If you don't have Jesus in your life, you truly have no hope. Let's move on to our second I am. That's in John chapter 8 and verse 12. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. John chapter 8 and verse 12. After the story of a woman brought to Jesus in the act of adultery, and he has that beautiful statement, passage, chapter 8, verse 11 verses. Then Jesus spake unto them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but he shall have the light of life. Think again to what he says. Flip over to chapter 9 and verse number 5, where he's going to echo these sentiments again. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. We're all familiar with light. We have used various forms of light in our day thus far. One light in a room full of darkness, I tell you what, it can make a world of difference. You go down in a cave and you just have one small little flashlight, you can see a whole lot more than you might expect if it's pure darkness and you have that one light. I tell you what I find interesting. You look up a dictionary definition of darkness, it's the absence of light. Which means light's truly important thing, right? Go back to the creation. God creates light. And then we see darkness is when that light is gone. Light's always a good thing. It should say not many good things happen in the dark, not in the light. There, that last point. You watch the news, especially the morning news, and they tell you what happened the night before, what stores were broken into, what robberies were committed, what murders were committed, and very rarely does somebody break in during the day. They want to do it at night where they can hopefully slip off into the darkness just a little bit more. Notice what Jesus says in John 12 verse 46. We just keep going through this book. We'll back up for the next one though. John chapter 12 and verse 46. Jesus says, I am come as a light into the world, that whosoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness. Dear friends, light and darkness cannot coexist. You either have light or you have the absence of light, which is darkness. Remember seeing those coexist bumper stickers? You seen those? And they use different, quote, symbols of religious freedoms, of religious beliefs to spell out the word coexist. And usually that T is going to be the cross. And they'll have the Star of David, and they'll have the Islamic symbols and this and that, dear friends. We can't coexist in a world with that. There is only one true religion. We'll get to that again in a moment. There is no coexistence. You can't say, well, you believe your way, I'll believe my way. Because you can't have both light and dark at the same time. You either got light or you don't have light, and you've got darkness. And Jesus says that He's the light of the world, and He came to shine light into the darkness. Light attracts people. Light guides people. Dear friends, Jesus truly is the light. He illuminates the way to heaven for us. We must walk in the light, 1 John 1:7, as He is in the light. So number two, He is the light of the world. Let's go on. Back up to chapter 10. In fact, we get two I am statements in John 10. And the first one, He says, I am the gate. He begins our story talking about the idea of a shepherd and a sheepfold. And so He says, after He has told the story, the parable spake unto them. They didn't understand it. So verse 7, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door, or I am the gate of the sheep. Gate will be in some translations, doors in others. Means the same thing. Means the point of entry. Now you and I, we live around farms. And most fields that you and I see, they'll have at least two gates on it, right? You'll have one up by the barn and you'll have one up by the road so you can get from one to the other. In biblical times, they were not so. They would build their fences near the house. And they would just kind of enclose a little lot behind there. And there would be one gate in every sheepfold. Just one. So that meant if you went into the sheepfold, you went in through the one door. And if you left, you went out the one door. Jesus talks about how people have come to kill and to steal, and they're trying to hop over the walls and do this and do that. It's not many doors. And He's using that as a parallel to heaven. He says, I am the one way that you're going to get into heaven. There's not going to be a back door entrance. Somebody's not going to miraculously come up with some idea on how to be saved and say, well, guess what? We just cut a new door. We just cut a new gate. Here's another. No. When He says, I am the door, or I am the gate, He has negated any other way of getting in. Because the is definite. I am the door. But stay with me in John chapter 10, because that brings us to point number four. He's going to go on to say, I am the good shepherd. Notice here, we'll read verse 10 and 11. The thief cometh not, but for to steal, to kill, to destroy. I am come, they might have life, that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. And the good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. Keep it going there, verse 12. But he is a hireling, and not the shepherd, whose own sheep are not. Seeth the wolf coming, he leaves the sheep, flees. The wolf catches them and scatters the sheep. The hireling flees because he is a hireling, and he cares not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I am known of my sheep. Some people that would just be watching sheep in biblical times, working a minimum wage job, I mean, they're getting paid to watch the sheep. They're getting paid to do their job, but they're only in it for a paycheck. So when threats arise, they just, you know what? I don't need this job. I go work somewhere else. We see that a lot today, don't we? People who are not invested in their work. Jesus is not a hireling. When trouble arises, hirelings flee. Do you? I tell you what, this shepherd has a great relationship with his sheep. So you remember how I said there's just one wall and one gate, one door area at night. That shepherd didn't go sleep in a bed. He didn't even sleep on a cot. He would sleep in that doorway. And it wasn't a wide doorway, but he would sleep in the doorway. That way, if you wanted to steal one of his sheep, you had to step over him as he's sleeping. Or if you're a wolf, you have to jump over him. So he acts as a line of protection and as a gatekeeper to let people in or to let people out. But he says, verse 14, know my sheep. You've been on a farm. You may have done this yourself. Growing up, we had a goat Betsy and a cow Rosie. And Rosie's mom was struck by lightning right after she gave birth. So we bottle fed Rosie and we had Betsy the goat. And Betsy thought she was a cow and the cow thought she was a goat. And they were just a match pair. And I could be across the field. And if I just said the word Rosie, she would come running. And she knew my voice because she knew I was going to feed her. I was going to give her some apples or whatever. And Betsy'd come as well. See, we had that relationship. They knew my voice. Jesus says, my sheep know my voice. Maybe it's like today, you live next to a farm, and if the farmer drives a white work truck or a farm truck, and he always feeds them out of a white truck, if the wrong white truck goes by, all the cows just follow it. You ever know? They know that truck. See, Jesus says, I know the sheep. Look, verse 14, and have known of mine. Can you say that of yourself? Jesus' sheep know his voice. Do you? Do you have a good relationship with God, or is it one where if something were to happen here and we just padlock the door, would you still worship God, or would you just say, well, I tried that whole religion thing. It's just not really working. I tell you, some people have what you might say a rented faith. You know, the benefits of a rental car if you're going on a long road trip is you can drive, not that you should, but in theory, you could drive as fast as you want to, and you can be as hard on that car, and you can slam on your brakes as much as possible and just do anything you want to because you're just paying by the day to have that car. Because at the end of that week, you're going to drive it back, hand them the keys. No harm, no foul on you. Too many people, I'm afraid, have a rented faith. They want to pick up faith for a little while. Want to test drive it out, want to live with it for a little while, and then all of a sudden they just, well, I'm done. I don't want it anymore. Let's close out, put this in context. John 10, 1 through 5. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, he that entereth not by the door of the sheepfold climbs in another way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door of the shepherd, or the door is the shepherd of the sheep, to him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his own voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, for the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. Thieves are never good. Are you going to let Satan walk in the front door? Jesus won't. Don't let Satan into your life. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. Let's move on. Number five. Go to John chapter 11. This is the passage of Lazarus. This is the chapter where Jesus not only finds out one of his best friends, Lazarus, is dead. He will go on to revive him, to bring him back to life. But Jesus says, I am the resurrection. I had to abbreviate. I am the resurrection and life. John 11 and 25. Jesus says unto Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. Jesus truly is showing that death is no big deal. I appreciate that prayer, Brother Carl, you had. I thought that was a wonderfully worded prayer of comfort, and I appreciated that. I was sitting there praying with you. Jesus wants us to realize that death, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal, because it's appointed a man wants to die. And after this comes a judgment. We make it a big deal. But if you're faithful to the Lord, it's a homecoming. If you're not faithful to the Lord, it's a pronouncement of misery. But those that are faithful, they're just going home. They don't live here anymore. Christians have stepped into eternity. Our physical body will fail. In fact, our physical body fails every day. And it progresses and gets weaker and weaker and weaker. But our soul doesn't. Our soul does not give out. See, Jesus says, I am the resurrection and I am the life. Now, I find interesting, he says resurrection and life, because we're going to move on to the sixth I am statement from John 14 and verse 6. He's going to say life again, but this time he's going to add a few extra things with it. He uses this in conjunction, John 14 and 6, with that beautiful passage that we think about at funerals, about Jesus leaving to go to prepare a place for us, and the fact he's coming again to receive us, that where he is, there we may also be. And Thomas says, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? And look at his rebuttal. Jesus said, verse 6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Won't you notice what Jesus says versus what he doesn't say? How many ways are there? One. How many truths are there? One. How many lives are there? One. That definite article, the, eliminates everything else. If I say I'm talking into the pulpit microphone, you know which one. But if I say, go step up to a microphone and speak, well, there's two right here. There's one back in the control room. It could be any of them. No, the pulpit. I have defined which one I want you to do. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And he's the only way to the Father. That goes back to the shepherd, right? He's the only way in because he's the door. See how these are connected? And you know the good news? Jesus can't lie. It is physically impossible for anything that Jesus Christ ever said to be a lie. Therefore, he's not going to lie to you. He is the way, the truth, and the life. Let's do our last one. John chapter 15 and verse number 1. Actually, let's do it 1 through 5. Put it in context. John 15, beginning in verse 1, he says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that bears not fruit, he takes away. Every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now you are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can you, except ye abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, you can do nothing. You know this to be true, right? The leaf pulled off the vine, it's going to die every time. You cut a branch off from the tree, it's going to die every time. It dies from that moment that you've plucked it off. It doesn't keep living. So then, you ever thought about people who cut themselves off from the Lord? They start dying. They're no longer being nourished. And then they sit there and go, well, I wonder why my faith isn't as strong. I wonder why I don't think about the Lord anymore. You cut yourself off. You've locked yourself from him. You know, flowers die when they're removed, and we do the same thing when we're removed from the vine. Yeah, they'll put flowers in water. Yeah, they'll continue to look nice for a couple of days. But they're going to stop looking nice at some point. I'm afraid where that's too many people get a false sense of security is they'll remove themselves from Christ. It's like putting roses in water. And it still looks okay for a little while. And they think, well, I don't need to go to church. I don't need to study. I don't need to do this. But then their petals start falling off. And then it's too late, right? That's just showing their signs of decay. There's just one vine. Not many vines. One vine. Dear friends, I would make a strong argument. We must be connected to the Father in a constant connection with him. Seven I am statements Jesus said to us. But who are you? He's told you all about him. He's told you everything he wants you to know. He goes back all the way to the Old Testament. He's not asking you to be God, for that's physically impossible. He's asking you to obey his commandments. I want to key into a thought that's presented in Luke chapter 15 as we close. The story of a man that had 100 sheep. And 99 sheep are fine. And that one sheep wanders off and he gets lost. And that shepherd leaves the 99 to go find that one. He finds him, throws him over his shoulders, comes back. And there is great rejoicing when that one sheep has been found. Well, Jesus is the good shepherd. And we are the sheep of his pasture. We are his church. We are his sheep. And he's out there looking for those who have wandered astray. Now there's two ways you can look at that story. One, if you're part of the 90 and 9, it doesn't really affect you, right? If you're part of the 90 and 9, you're safe, doesn't matter. But oh boy, does that story hit a little differently when you're that one. When you're that one that's wandered away and the shepherd's out there looking for you. He's looking for you right now. Our invitation song, Just As I Am. Dear friends, if you are lost, you can be found. You can come to Him just as you are. Hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, being baptized, having those sins washed away. We'd be glad to assist you in that this morning. If you're not a Christian, why not respond? If you are a Christian and you're not faithful, you need to return home. He's still the only way to heaven. So you need to return home and be faithful to Him once again. And look at how Jesus describes Himself. Pretty good, isn't it? If we can help you in any way at all, we humbly ask you, let it be known while we stand and while we sing.